I mean, are we not trading bad boys moving time on violence?
These are not.
I'm just telling you, these questions are coming.
Oh, yeah.
These questions will happen. I'm sorry. I think for years, these rules have made people animals. There should be rules to this stuff. They should get you a booklet for you to get.
Are you up first?
Oh, I don't know. So,
I'm just saying. Right.
I think are we up first? 155?
You're 155, right? Yeah, we got it down for a second.
Okay, we're up second.
Oh, there you are. Yeah, we'll have you up first.
I'm just saying. There should be rules to this. I think these weed laws make people animals. I think there should be a manual.
We'll call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. Please silence all cell phones. The time is 1:35 p.m. on Tuesday, April 23rd, 2014. I'm joined today by Senator Merrick, Senator Keel, Senator Wilson, Senator Bishop, Co-Chair Stedman, and Co-Chair Hoffman. I'd like to go ahead and note that we're hearing two bills this afternoon, HB 28 and HB 155. First one up is HB 28, Access to Marijuana Control Conviction Records by Representative Stanley Wright. This is the first hearing. Representative Wright, please come on up here with your staff and go ahead and present the bill, please.
For the record, I'm Representative Stanley Wright. Through the chair, members of the committee, Mr. Chair, I do appreciate you all for hearing this piece of legislation today, House Bill 28. In 2014, Alaskans voted to legalize the cultivation, sale, and possession of marijuana for those 21 years and older. Despite the change in the state law, some Alaskans remain blocked from employment and housing due to previous marijuana possession convictions that would not be a crime today. Version R of House Bill 28 would prevent the Department of Public Safety from releasing criminal justice information for low-level nonviolent marijuana possession charges, which are no longer crimes under the current statute. These offenders, they are no longer a crime. It would be folks that were at least 21 years of age at the time of the offense, was not convicted of any other criminal charges at the time, and also requests the agency not release these records. By restricting the release of these records, House Bill 28 seeks to empower individuals to move forward with their lives without the burden of past convictions that are no longer crimes, hindering their opportunities for employment, housing, and personal growth. It recognizes the need to provide these individuals with a fair chance to reintegrate into society and contribute meaningful to our communities. And with that, I'll pass things over to my Chief of Staff, Mr. Forrest Wolf.
Please.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, Forrest Wolf, staff to Representative Wright. So I'm just going to kind of provide a brief history of this legislation. It's first introduced in 2019 by then-Senator Tom Begich. And as I'm sure many of the people in this room will remember, that session ended very early in 2020 due to COVID, so it didn't progress further that session. Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins had it in the previous session, and it just kind of ran out of steam towards the end, which is where our office picked it up, the same version that was the final version in the previous legislature. The impetus for this bill was when Representative Wright was going door-to-door in his district. Several people that he talked to said, hey, this is still causing me problems. I'm still getting turned down for jobs, for housing, renting apartments and condos and taking out loans. And, you know, it's been, 10 years since the state decided that we would decriminalize and legalize the recreational use of marijuana. And we took up the mantle of it moving forward, just trying to, put things right. And it's been long enough. These people should not be affected by these convictions that would, if they were committed today, not be a crime. So the current version before you now, version R, has undergone a couple of changes since it was first introduced by our office, the most notable of which is Section 4, which is in the prior version of the bill, dealt with the Alaska court system and instructed the court system to remove these convictions from the publicly available version of court view. Soon after the introduction of our legislation, the court system came up with a ruling themselves that instructed them to do this. So that section was removed in the previous committee, Senate Judiciary, because it's already being done and therefore no longer necessary. So the current version simply deals with the Department of Public Safety. like I said, these are simply nonviolent, low-level, simple marijuana possession charges that are no longer a crime. With that, I do have some invited testimony lined up for us today. We have David Morgan from the Reason Foundation. I also believe we should have Ryan Tunseth, who is the president of the Alaska Marijuana Industry Association. And then from the department side of things, I do have from the court system, Nancy Mead, to talk about the court system fiscal note and how this bill would affect or no longer affect the court system, as well as Lisa Perrington from the Department of Public Safety. So with that, we'll take any questions or move to invited testimony.
Okay. Well, I'll call up the invited testimony when we're ready.
Sure thing.
First of all, do we have any members of the committee that want to go ahead and ask the prime sponsor or his chief of staff any questions? Senator Wilson.
Yes, thank you. You know, I'm just a little concerned, and maybe you can answer just a few questions. You know, won't this just let sort of what we consider bad boys just move in silence and violence?
Through the chair, to Senator Wilson.
Representative Wright.
Oh.
You hear the question?
Yes, Representative Wright, for the record. Absolutely not. This is an opportunity for folks to reach their full potential and move on with their lives.
And Mr. Wolf.
Through the chair to Senator Wilson, I would just say that these are for nonviolent crimes, not moving in violence or silence.
Okay. Follow up, Senator Wilson.
Yeah, just, we were talking a little bit about other misdemeanor crimes, sort of the evolution of court view and allowing people to, and, talking with the bill sponsor earlier today, just wondering if it would be a sort of a larger piece just to not allow misdemeanor offenses to be sort of judgment on discrimination for housing, employment, opportunities of that nature, and just wondering if there would be a bigger way, just because I'm a little worried about sort of this, you know, this breeding jealousy for the cheddar that folks may be holding.
Representative Wright?
I think that it's an opportunity for folks to finally, you know, move on with their lives. It's one of the things that I think we all want. Right? Everyone makes mistakes, and when that happens, you would look for redemption at some point in life, right? And you know, being a good Christian myself, I believe in that.
Thank you,
Mr. Wolf.
Through the chair to Senator Wilson. So I would say that the issue, the law that we're dealing with, is no longer a crime; it's no longer a misdemeanor. Whereas some of the other misdemeanors that you're referring to, DUIs and things of that nature, are still crimes under the Alaska statute. So I think that's where the difference is.
Honorable Senator Wilson, any other question from members of the committee about this bill? I guess so. I do have a question. One that has to do with, we're dealing with state law here in the state government. Isn't it still against the law to go ahead and, it's a federal violation to go ahead and have some of these and be in possession of marijuana? Is that not the case anymore?
Actually, through the chair, Representative Wright, that federally, I believe it's still legal federally. Illegal, sorry. It's illegal federally. So, yeah, we're talking about state law here. We're only affecting what happens in Alaska.
Okay. You want to comment on that, Mr. Wolf?
To the chair, I do not.
Okay. Any further questions by members of the committee? Senator Wilson, I'm sorry.
Thank you. So I know this bill doesn't touch on sort of the felony folks that may have other sort of DUIs, but for so many folks, they've been in this game for so many years. And, you know, some people may think that's more animalistic, just call them, you know, animals. But are there going to be rules to this for folks, like a manual for folks to get, so they can understand the differences and how this may affect them later on in life, in terms of how these convictions may be overturned or how this may, it's not an expungement, things of that nature? Just wondering if the department's going to write a manual.
Representative Wright.
Through the chair, Representative Wright, for the record. Absolutely, Senator. There are rules to this. You have to have been convicted when you're at the age of 21 or older. And also, just a second. Sorry, get my notes together. So you couldn't have any other charges whenever you were convicted. And so that if you had any other charges, any violent offenses or anything like that, this will not help you. But if you had any other violent offenses, you can't use this to your advantage. But also, you would have to request to the Department of Public Safety to have the record be sealed as well.
Thank you.
Senator Wilson?
No.
Senator Stedman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering if the bill sponsor could help us on how many Alaska citizens this, you know, would be, what this would entail. Are we dealing with dozens or hundreds or thousands, or what are we dealing with here?
Representative Wright.
Through the chair, Representative Wright, for the record, it would be 8,500 individuals.
8,500 individuals, Alaskans, have got convictions of marijuana possession.
Yes, that would fall under this.
Mm-hmm. Senator Bishop.
Mr. Representative Wright, good afternoon, sir. Would it be not, it's up to the individual if this became law for them to go down this pathway to see if they could get it expunged correctly? Is that correct? It's not going to be an automatic, they're just going to go to work on expunging 8,500 cases.
Through the chair, Representative Wright. Yes, so they would have to go and apply for it. There's going to be a position that would be created through the Department of Public Safety that's why we have a fiscal note.
Senator Wilson, Senator Bishop.
No, thank you.
Any further questions for members of the committee for either the bill sponsor or Steve Chief of Staff? If not, we'll go on to invited testimony. First up we have is David Morgan Jr., the Government Affairs Associate for the Reason Foundation, who's online.
Thank you for this opportunity, Mr. Chair, Good afternoon. My name is David Morgan, and I'm a Legislative Affairs Associate at Reason Foundation. And again, thank you for this opportunity to speak. 7 years after legalization, many Alaskans are still saddled with criminal records for low-level marijuana possession. A one-size-fits-all approach of lifelong criminal records simply doesn't make sense, especially considering that marijuana possession is no longer considered a crime in Alaska. Nearly 90% of employers nationwide conduct background checks on job applicants. And research suggests that job applicants with criminal convictions are approximately 50% less likely to receive a callback. To the extent that low-level marijuana possession conviction records act as a barrier to employment and make it harder for people to stay on the right side of the law, the relief provided under this bill would promote public safety while saving precious taxpayers' dollars. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Any questions by members of the committee for Mr. Morgan? Mr. Morgan, can you just make me more familiar with what the Reason Foundation is and what your goals are, what your mission statement is?
Yes, very much. Thank you for the opportunity to speak about Reason Foundation. We are a nonprofit think tank, and we work on a myriad of public policy issues. We pride ourselves in bringing solutions to the table. We work on issues such as criminal justice reform, transportation, consumer freedom, pension reform, technology, a myriad of issues across the public sector, public policy arena. And as I said, we pride ourselves in bringing sound research to the table when it comes to public policy.
Okay, and are you here in the state of Alaska?
No, I live in Metro Atlanta, Georgia, but all of us are remote, so we have people who work throughout the country. It just so happens that one of the areas in which I do work, public policy areas in which I do work, is criminal justice reform.
And so the Reason Foundation is a national foundation that gets involved in some of these issues?
Yes, we're a national organization. We work throughout the country, as I said, in the public policy areas that I alluded to earlier.
Okay. If there are no further questions for Mr. Morgan, I want to thank you for coming out this afternoon, especially for calling in so far away.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the opportunity again, Mr. Chair and Committee.
Thanks. Next up is Ryan Tunsa, President of the Alaska Marijuana Industry Association. Mr. Tunsa, are you on, sir?
Yes, sir, I am. Thank you, Senate Finance Committee, Chairs Hoffman, Olson, and Stedman. My name is Ryan Tunseth. I'm the president of the Alaska Marijuana Industry Association. And first, I would just like to say thank you. It's an honor to testify today in front of such a diverse committee. Doing a little bit of background research as physicians, pilots, attorneys, previous department commissioners, municipal league leaders, those with experience working in the U.S. Capitol, the longest serving member of the Alaska legislature, and the first African-American member elected in their district, among other things. So it's an honor to be able to testify to you today. I have no doubt that you have the chops to understand the issues around cannabis and restorative justice. Previously, I had testified to the Senate Judiciary on January 19th, and at that time, the Health and Human Services had made a recommendation to the DEA to reschedule cannabis from Class 1 to Class 3. And again, recently members of Congress have signaled that 24 may be, in fact, the last year that we grapple with cannabis in its unfair classification. As you know, the nexus for meeting Class 1 criteria is that it must meet all three of these categories. It must be highly addictive, have no medicinal value, and you must be able to overdose from it. We know that the FDA has approved cannabis drugs in Epilodex and Sativex, and you can't OD from cannabis. So it clearly doesn't meet Class 1, and to further put this into perspective, fentanyl is a Class 2 substance. I take great pain in laboring this point because I want to demonstrate the silliness of these types of citations in the first place, citations that nationally were applied disproportionately to Black and Brown communities. Luckily, we know in Alaska certainly that there's a better way. in taxing and regulating cannabis, that we stop branding people as criminals for using a substance that's safer than alcohol. We make our communities safer by removing cannabis from the criminal market. We establish control over our market, and so we save taxpayer dollars and generate revenue. We also know that cannabis prohibition plays a major role in filling our prisons with people of color, and cannabis convictions make it more difficult to obtain housing, jobs, and education. So this is just a step forward in restorative justice that would simply prevent landlords or employers from discovering these records and using that information to deny these individuals the assistance or opportunities to enjoy a life of liberty and the pursuit of happiness. The AMIA stands in support of HB 28 and any legislation that would improve positive life outcomes for these individuals affected. So that concludes my testimony. Thank you. And again, it's a privilege to speak with you all today. I'm happy to take any questions.
Any questions by members of the committee for Mr. Tunset? If I heard you correctly, Mr. Tunset, you said the AMA was in favor of this legislation. Is that true, sir?
Yes, absolutely. We support this.
We support it? You mean you're a medical doctor that's part of the AMA?
No, I'm a member of the AMIA, which is the Alaska Marijuana Industry Association.
Okay, I'm sorry, I misunderstood you. I thought you were the AMA. With that,
no, sir.
No further question for Mr. Tunset? Thank you very much for coming out this afternoon, Mr. Tunset.
Thanks for having me.
Next person up is Lisa Purinton, Legislative Liaison, Department of Public Safety. Please come up to the mic and identify yourself for the record and go over some of the fiscal notes.
Thank you. For the record, Lisa Purinton, Department of Public Safety, Division of Statewide Services Director. To the chair, the department does have a fiscal note on this bill. It's for the OMB component of 3200 with a published date of 3/29/2024. The fiscal note is it's a two-year cost. The first-year cost, the department estimates $194,000. The second-year cost is just over $120,000. The costs are slightly higher in the first year because the department will need to contract support to update the state's criminal history repository. Mm-hmm. The state's criminal history repository is a legacy mainframe system that takes a little while to find a contractor to update the system. So we estimate it will be approximately $56,000 based on our past experience with contractor support to reprogram the mainframe to shield these records from being displayed for certain background checks. I do just want to clarify, this does not expunge a record. Expunge in a lot of other states will have different connotations. Expunge means to delete the record so that it no longer exists. And this is not going to delete the record. It would still be available for certain background checks like law enforcement, nursing, teachers, certain nationally required, federally required background checks. It does not also seal the record by state statute. We have a different definition of sealing, and in those cases, it's for false or mistaken identity. So it doesn't fall under either one of those criteria. It is specifically to prevent these records upon request from being displayed for what we call an any person background check. And then the first-year, second-year costs will also include a full-time person temporarily for the 2 years to research the approximately 8,500 records that we have identified in the state's criminal history repository where the individual was convicted of a single offense of the crime that's outlined in this bill. It will require research because the state's criminal history repository has been in place since the 1980s. It did not always retain statutes for the definition for those convictions. Sometimes it had just a four-digit code, an offense code. So those will all have to be manually researched Also, differences in the statutes didn't always have the proper subsections listed. Sometimes it just listed the main body of the statute. So it's hard to identify on face value that whether the conviction was for under an ounce or not. And then also to identify if the individual was 21 or older at the time the offense was committed will also take some review. So while this bill does require the individual to reach out to the department to request these records be shielded, we would like to take a proactive approach with the staffing to review all of the records that could potentially qualify or not qualify, and then we will make a note on that record. So if and when that individual comes forward, then we can expeditiously address their record and get it resolved for them rather quickly.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you. My understanding is this bill would work for folks that have to request those criminal records. And the 8,000 folks going way back to the 80s, you know, I'm just thinking of like consignment type of situations. And this is only strictly for live men. And the department doesn't have a bunch of sort of freshmen operating this system and knowing how to do the research. So do you think the clientele will show?
Ms. Pierre.
Through the chair to Senator Wilson, that would be dependent on the individual to have that information. I'm afraid I couldn't speculate on that one.
And, Senator Wilson?
Yeah, you also mentioned on more than an ounce. Do you think that we have to go back to those criminal records and see which ones we might need to go back from the court cases? Do we need to go look at those court cases?
Ms. Purinton.
Through the chair to Senator Wilson, yes, we would have to go back in and look at those court cases. With the department, the way the current criminal history repository is set up, it is a computer database, but we have what we call an image archive, so in microfilm, that has the copies of those judgments. Those court cases are actually on file, so we would have to dig through those documents. And for any documents that we wouldn't have, we would have to reach out to the court system to get those copies of those police reports or those court judgments.
Thank you.
Senator Keel.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Any further questions by members of the committee for Ms. Purinton? One of the questions I have is the Department of Public Safety in favor of this bill?
The department is neutral on the bill. Okay. Through the chair, sorry.
No problem.
Okay, well, thank you very much for coming out. I'm sorry, Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Chair Olson. I appreciate the department trying to be proactive on this, but researching 8,500 cases with probably not even close to that as many people requesting this service, it just seems like a lot of work. Thank you.
One of the questions I do have is that in FY, after FY 28, the fiscal notes goes down to zero. Can you tell me why that is? Well, before it costs almost $200,000 a year to go ahead and implement it.
To the chair, what the department anticipates is being proactive to review those records, hiring the staff. That would be their sole job, is to review and research those records. The department does have experience with that. We have other positions whose job is to look at missing dispositions. So we have the experience that we would hopefully get a person trained up rather quickly. And the hope is that we would be able to complete this within a 2-year time frame to review those records.
Okay. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess just to follow up on Senator Merrick's question, if the department is going to research all the potential cases right up front, why wait for folks to come in and request that they not be that the records not be disclosable? Maybe that's a question for the sponsor. I don't know.
Ms. Purinton.
Through the chair to Senator Keel's question, that's the way the bill is written, that they would request it. So that's where we're proactively putting it out there, and then if they would request it.
Follow up, Senator Keel.
No, Mr. Chairman, maybe I'll follow up with the sponsor. Thank you.
Okay. You want to ask him right now? Representative Wright.
For the record, Representative Stanley Wright, the chair. I'm welcome to any amendment that would enhance this piece of legislation.
Okay. Any further questions by members of the committee for either Ms. Purinton, the Department of Public Safety, or the bill sponsor, Ms. Chief of Staff? If not, thank you very much for coming up this afternoon. Next, we have Nancy Mead, the General Counsel for the Alaska Court System. Apparently, the court system has a zero fiscal note. Is that true?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, for the record, Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System. The court system does have a zero fiscal note. This bill does not impact the court system at all. It, a prior version of the bill required the court system to remove conviction records of people who had less than an ounce of marijuana from court view. That is not in the current version of the bill. That those cases do not appear on court view, so there's no need for a bill asking the court to remove those from court view. So we have no impact and a zero fiscal note.
Any further question by members of the committee for Ms. Mead? If not, I have a question for you from a legal standpoint. As you look at some of the things that have happened in the past, these convictions were there when it was illegal here in the state of Alaska. So how do you morally justify it, something that's somebody that knows that it's illegal to go and have, were convicted of it, and then now you're asking to go ahead and almost expunge them to make it so that, as if it never happened, where before they willfully went ahead and took the substance they knew it was wrong, but they still did what was illegal at the time. How do you justify that from a legal standpoint?
To the chair, these people would still have a conviction on their record. I mean, you've pinpointed the crux of the policy decision that this legislature needs to make. At the time, they did something that was illegal, and they, even though later it became legal, they did something illegal. They were convicted of that. It is up to this legislature whether they want that to be something that is not publicized or kept more or less under wraps through both court view and the rest of the bill that speaks of the criminal history background checks. And legally, the court and the legislature can decide what appears on court view. And so as a matter of legal considerations, I don't think there's a problem with having cases come off court view or for the legislature to have bills such as this. As a policy matter, you might decide that that isn't appropriate, and that's this body's call.
Senator Wilson.
Yeah, so I just want to get an understanding, just make sure, Ms. Mead, and in this version, the court can get by on their own supply of staffing in terms of you don't need any more additional staff to...
Ms. Mead.
Right. Through the chair to Senator Wilson. First of all, this version of the bill doesn't touch the court. We will not change anything. This has nothing to do with the court system at this point. In May of 2023, the court system, the Supreme Court, passed its own rule requiring that these cases come off court view. We were able to implement that with no cost at all. Our system is different from the Department of Public Safety's system. We identified 750 cases that qualified and removed 750 cases. We have a system on our website. It says if your case is on court view and you believe it should not be for one reason or another, here's a form to fill out. That sometimes happens. For example, some domestic violence cases come off court view, and some people say, hey, my DV case is on there and it shouldn't. We get those requests. With respect to these marijuana records, we've received virtually no requests. So we did a pretty good job of getting them off court view, if you measure it by that.
Bob, Senator Wilson. Any further questions from members of the committee for Ms. Mead? The question I have for you is the court system in favor of the legislation?
To the chair, the legislation doesn't impact the court system whatsoever, and as usual, we're neutral.
Okay, thank you very much for coming up this afternoon.
Thank you.
We'll open it up to public testimony. First one up is Lacey Wilcox. Ms. Wilcox, are you on, ma'am?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
You're coming in loud and clear. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Olson. Good afternoon. My name is Lacey Wilcox. I am a resident of Juneau, testifying today on behalf of myself. I have been involved in smart justice reform and pro-cannabis policy for over 10 years, but my history with cannabis and its complicated legal status began as a youth born in Homer, the home of several cannabis champions, but notably Irwin Raven. I have watched growing up in my small town, good-meaning people grapple with a super difficult choice to perhaps use cannabis as a therapeutic medicine to treat their ailments, specifically acute pain, or not use the plant medicine for fear of the justice system. In both cases, there's a disastrous consequence. When deciding against plant medicine for fear of prosecution, one can be led to a lifelong addiction of a far stronger substance, such as opioids. I've watched this play out my whole life. Alternatively, choosing to consume the plant medicine for your pain or whatever ails you could have led to criminal charges and consequences that create the barriers to entry that this bill seeks to lower. As you can imagine, there was no easy choice through years of complicated history with our legal status. In fact, over my lifetime alone, the status of cannabis has legally changed 5 times. It has been confusing, to say the least, for people to understand whether you can grow it, if you can consume it, if you can have it with you, etc. I am happy to provide a quick summary of status changes should a member ask for it in follow-up. It is with this knowledge and background as an advocate for cannabis legalization and pro-therapy of natural plant medicine that I am in support of HB 28 and have supported it in prior versions. I wanted to share this not often discussed perspective with you today in hopes that you can support this legislation as well. I do want to thank Representative Wright and prior session sponsors of similar legislation, and I feel strongly it's time to see this move forward. I thank you for your time and support of those who perhaps chose a safer alternative to highly addictive opioids. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming out. Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Wilcox by members of the committee? Again, thank you again for coming out, Ms. Wilcox. Anybody else online or in the room who want to go ahead and testify on this bill? We'll go ahead and close public testimony. Any discussion, questions on the bill? Any closing comments, Senator, Representative Wright?
Rep Wright, for the record, I want to thank the committee for hearing this piece of legislation. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Wolf?
Chair, I don't have any closing comments. Okay. Thank you for hearing the bill.
Okay, thank you very much for coming out and we'll set this bill aside. Next, House bill we're hearing is House Bill 155, which establishes the Military Affairs Commission by Representative Will Stapp. This is the first hearing. Representative Stapp, please come on up with your Chief of Staff, Honor Miller Austin, and introduce the bill, please.
Thank you, Chair Olson. For the record, my name is Representative Will Staff. I represent the East Fairbanks, Fort Wainwright, and Badger Road, and this is my staff.
Hi, through the chair, my name is Honor Miller Austin, staff to Representative Will Staff.
And again, thank you, members of the Senate Finance Committee. With the permission of the chair, I'd just like to give a quick overview of HB 155, the establishment of the Military Affairs Commission bill, and what its intentions to do, where the historicity came from. And then I'd like to turn it over to my staff to present the details of the bill and then the sectional analysis. So, in a nutshell, folks, there was an existing commission that was founded by executive committee order. Is called ACAS. ACAS is looking to sunset here in this June. And HB 155 would replace ACAS with the Military Affairs Commission. That commission is designed around a program at Fairbanks we call affectionately our Fairbanks Tiger Team. The Tiger Team was established years ago by our local members of our community to fight what's called the BRAC Commission when Eielson Air Force Base was listed on the closure list. It's been a very successful model, and HB 155 looks to replicate that model on a statewide basis to help not only leverage DOD investment in our communities, but ensure that there's a great open line of communication between the Department of Defense, individuals who are actively invested in the military and the private sector in the state, as well as access to the legislature and the executive. So without further ado, I'll turn the rest over to my staff, Ms. Honor Miller Austin.
Through the chair, my name again is Honor Miller Austin. And I will be doing the sectional analysis for HB 155. Section 1 is the legislative intent, and it establishes that the legislative intent behind the creation of the Alaska Military Affairs Commission. It specifies the commission's members, including mayors and public members, should it be geographically distributed to represent a wide range of communities across the state. Section 2 is creating the Alaska Military Affairs Commission in the Office of the Governor. It outlines the composition of the commission, including 9 members, and it has them listed as follows. The Lieutenant Governor is the Chair, Adjutant General, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, or designee, Commissioner of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, or their designee, 3 mayors, or their designees from municipalities with U.S. Armed Forces installations, 2 public members with military experience, and 1 public member with business or economic development experience. It also outlines the meetings, quorum, and administrative support, as well as the duties of the commission, and defines the word commission as the Alaska Military Affairs Commission. Section 3 is a sunset clause. It establishes a sunset clause indicating that the Alaska Military Affairs Commission will cease to exist June 30, 2030. And Section 4 creates uncodified law going into detail of the staggered terms listed in Section 2.
Any question by members of the committee for Representative Staff or his trustee chief of staff over there? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, thanks for bringing this forward. As we look at the text of the bill, and it talks about our armed forces and military installations, can you give me the brief rundown on how that's defined? And the reason I ask, of course, that we often think about the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, but as we sit in the head of the 17th Coast Guard District, they're not technically under DOD. Can you run us through that?
Yeah, thank you, Senator Keel, through the chair. For the record, again, my name is Representative Will Stapp. This is kind of a sheepish mistake that I made when I drafted this bill. Actually, I did not know that the Coast Guard did not fall under Department of Defense. So we actually had to amend that into our own bill. I think we did that on the House side in DMVA. Because obviously, you know, the Coast Guard is a very proud member of the military forces in the state of Alaska, and we wanted to make sure that all the branches were represented within the commission itself. So I appreciate the question, though, Senator.
Thank you.
Senator Bishop.
And that would be the explanation for the economic indicators for Kodiak Island of only 19 personnel. The Coast Guard not included.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop. There are installation and bases, and obviously right here in Juneau, there's a nice Coast Guard cutter that I saw out on the docks the other day. So that's really the enhanced economic impact, and it's really about ensuring that we at the local level, at the state level, can really pull our resources in the best way practical to be able to maximize future DOD investment in our state.
Follow up?
No, thanks.
Any further questions from Representative Staff or members of the committee? If not, we have Kelly Howell, who's the Chief of Staff for the Lieutenant Governor, on the phone to talk about the fiscal note. Ms. Howell, are you on, ma'am?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. This is Kelly Howell for the record. Can you hear me?
You're coming in loud and clear.
Excellent. Mr. Chair and members of the Senate Finance Committee, the Office of the Lieutenant Governor did submit a fiscal note for this bill. We are requesting a part-time position to support the commission as required by the bill. And so the fiscal note encompasses the cost for that part-time position, as well as travel for commission members and any support costs for the position, supplies and things for the for the meetings. So the first year is $86,500, which includes some one-time startup costs for the position, and then ongoing annual costs of $84,500, again, to support and staff the Military Affairs Commission.
Any further questions by members of the committee for Ms. Howell? If not, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon, Ms. Howell.
Thank you.
I'd like to open it up to public testimony. Anybody in the room want to go ahead and testify? Anybody online want to go ahead and testify? Mr. Ward? Bryce Ward, are you on, sir?
Yes, thank you. My name is Bryce Ward. I'm the Fairbanks North Star Borough Mayor, and I'll be providing testimony if you can hear me and I'm ready.
Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you for hearing the HB 155 to support the Military Affairs Commission. There's a lot of benefits I think the state has to gain from this. As Representative Stapp mentioned, the state's governor's executive order commission will be sunsetting. I think the intention is that this particular role can be filled by this new commission, really focusing on long-term strategy, being able to provide recommendations to the executive branch as well as the legislative branch on anything as it pertains to supporting the military missions, really ensuring that those missions are protected and prepared to meet the needs and the goals of the country and our state. By having a commission that can focus on those long-term goals and look at it from a statewide perspective, I think it gives great benefit to the state to be able to be strategic in how we can sustain and grow the missions that are here in the state of Alaska and really be proactive instead of reactive when it comes to base changes. We are certainly seeing a lot of energy and I guess more focus, if you will, on the Arctic, and Alaska needs to be at the table when it comes to our nation's defense and talking about how the military does its work here in Alaska to support our nation and our country's defense. The position that was talked about, I think there's a need. There certainly is a need for someone to be representing the state on a national level. The borough is, Fairbanks North Star Borough is often in conversations across the country in discussions with the Association of Defense Communities and other military partners, and they routinely ask where the state is. And, you know, we are definitely engaged as a statewide partner, but there certainly is a need for the state to be more present in many of those discussions. And I think the MAC has the ability to help provide that seat and someone to do that work in support of the executive and legislative branches. Thank you. That concludes my testimony.
Any questions by members of the committee for Mayor Bryce Ward? If not, anybody have any further discussion or questions by the bill sponsor or his chief of staff? I'm sorry, Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Chair Olson. Thank you, Representative Stapp, for bringing this forward. I plan on cross-sponsoring this legislation. Just out of curiosity, number one on the list of the nine members is Lieutenant Governor, and you did not include or designee, where designees were listed amongst the others. Can you give the reason for that, and is there any concern that the Lieutenant Governor will not have the opportunity, time to participate?
Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Olson, through the chair to Senator Merrick. Yeah, so my thought was, actually, I kind of kicked the idea back and forth of which executive office. So kind of what would make sense to me is the longevity and really having the Lieutenant Governor provide a very defined vision for the commission as far as the authority and really the long-term execution of what we're trying to achieve. I certainly don't have a problem if folks want to amend the word or designee in there. My intent is really to provide some sort of like centralized weight when we're dealing with these organizations that other states are sending their executive representatives to. So I felt that after discussions with a lot of different folks and especially in the Fairbanks and how the Tiger team operated, and even with the members on the third floor, that it would appropriate actually to have Lieutenant Governor given a real role and in a seat at the table on this adventure, because the military is very important to our whole state in its totality. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Nobody else is online. We'll go ahead and close public testimony. If there's no further questions, I want to thank you very much for coming up this afternoon and presenting the bill. We'll set this bill aside. Concludes our agenda for this afternoon. The next Hearing is tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. We'll be hearing the operating and mental health budgets, HB 268 and HB 270. There's no other business to come before the committee. We are adjourned at 2:20 p.m.